Hero Hype, episode 40. Yeah, that's right, we're the big 40. And I'm Beck. So, for anyone who may have wondered, after Caitlin said last week that I had some family issues, everything is okay, I'm back, and everything's great. So, looking forward to getting right back into talking about all of the stuff that's been on over the last week, including the Agent Carter finale. But as always, I'm joined by my co-host Caitlin.
Hello.
And if you guys want to get involved in the conversation, you can do so by hitting us up on Twitter, which is at HeroHypePodcast. You can email us at HeroHypePodcast@gmail.com, or you can leave a comment on this post when it goes up on Hypable.com. But let's get right into things. We're going to kick things off with a brief history. And this week, courtesy of Caitlin, who wrote a fantastic article on Hyperbole, we're going to give you a brief history of Indigo. So Indigo, aka Brainiac 8, is a sub-program designed by Brainiac 6, a descendant of the original Brainiac, to endear herself to the superhero community, thus serving as something of a Trojan horse for Brainiac 1. She was created in the distant future and sent back to the 21st century. After conflict with the Young Justice and Teen Titans team that resulted in casualties for the heroes, she was eventually shut down. Star Labs rebuilt her and seemingly erased her past memories, so she joined the Outsiders. Her personality was naive as she tried to integrate with her teammates and human society, as well as earn forgiveness for what she had done upon arriving in the 21st century. She found pleasure in simple things, and she even found love with a metamorpho clone, Shift. Indigo is eventually revealed as a traitor among the Outsiders as her personality reverted back to Brainiac 8. A sleeper agent, she was sent back in time to kill Donna Troy, aka Wonder Girl, because she would stop the Koleon Empire's domination of organic beings after the events of Infinite Crisis. This is like the most ridiculous superhero back, like super story. It's comic books, guys, go with it. After a battle with the combined forces of the Teen Titans and Outsiders, Indigo wrestles control back from Brainiac 8, proving herself a distinct personality. She begs Shift to kill her before Brainiac 8 takes control again and harms her loved ones, so Shift transforms her into an organic being, which kills her. She later returns as part of Superboy Prime's Legion of Doom, though she is eventually destroyed a second time by Robin and Red Robin. No, guys, seriously, this is the most comic booky thing ever. It's like some Romeo and Juliet crap.
Yeah.
It's so ridiculous, but why Indigo? Because we got to see her on Supergirl this week. So figured you might be interested to hear where she came from. But all kudos goes to Caitlin for this week's brief history, because she did a lot of research and put this together. So if you want to read the full article, it's up on Hyperbole.com right now. And it has a little bit more of like sort of comparing and contrasting with what we got on Supergirl as well, which was really cool. So, yay, Caitlin! right, let's get into some of our headlines of the week for TV. So, ABC have gone ahead and renewed a whole load of shows. So, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has been renewed for a new season, so we are absolutely going to be getting a season 4 of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. But amongst these 15 shows that we got confirmation of renewal for, Agent Carter was not amongst them. Now, doesn't mean it's entirely off the cards, because this is actually really early for renewals for ABC. Like, they've done this a lot earlier than they usually do. So, I'm not completely concerned yet. However, that show that Hayley Atwell is going to be on the same network is going full steam ahead. Like, they've picked up a showrunner, they've picked up more cast, so it's kind of neither here nor there right now. It's probably on the bubble, I would say. Its ratings weren't amazing, but at the same time, it's a Marvel collaboration show, so you never really know what's going to happen.
And Hayley Atwell said that ABC would allow her to do both shows if Agent Carter is picked up. So
yeah.
her commitment to her other show won't be the deciding factor in whether the show gets renewed.
Exactly. There will be other things kind of involved there. So if you do want to see Agent Carter come back, a load of fans online have shown you how to get in touch with ABC. I'll see if I can retweet something so you can have a look. So just let ABC know if you loved season two. And, you know, the more voices involved in that conversation, the better. You know, feedback never hurts. So, and I guess the other little thing that we got, now that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is on the horizon for coming back, Ward's new identity has been officially revealed. So Ward is going to be taking on the villain known as Hive. So I guess Hive in the comics is like the Hydra lab created parasites that kind of take over bodies, but in the comics it's like more tentacly and really grotesque and twisted and horrible. But, you know, the live action version looks kind of, it's still grotesque. Let's get that out of the way. He still looks pretty damn creepy, but he kind of just looks like a gray dead body with horrible black veins and anyway, yeah.
And no connection to Damian Dark.
No, none at all. Not that Hive. Completely different Hive. But yeah, so anyone who had any other theories as to who Ward might eventually end up being, no, they have officially confirmed he's dead. Hive has taken over his body. There is going to be distinct connections back to Hydra, and yes, it's going to diverge a little bit from the comic book version of Hive, but yeah, we've got confirmation that that's who he is. So yeah, that's gonna be a lot of fun.
Ding dong, the douche is dead.
I know, but yeah, it's so close though, so I'm really excited to kind of see what they're gonna do with this half of the season, because Hive's actually a pretty terrifying villain in the comics. So if Brett Dalton can, and I don't have any doubts that Brett Dalton can pull off like really a really terrifying villain. He's got the villain thing down pat pretty much, because, you know, he really does inspire you to dislike Ward. So so, you know, amping that up to being like full on terrible, awful villain. Like, I'm interested to see what he'll do with it, because it's, even though Ward has been a villain pretty much all along, Hive is going to be a completely different kind of villain to what we've seen previously. So,
and will this tie into why Bobby and Hunter end up on the run with no friends?
Yeah, yeah. I'm not going to get into my thoughts on that, because I basically, you know how I've said that it's pretty much them doing Clint and Bobby's story without actually being able to use Hawkeye? It's pretty much one of Clint and Bobby's storylines without being able to actually use Hawkeye. So I have some feelings about that, but it's going to be interesting to see what causes them to go on the run, because of a lot of all of the people, Bobby has been one of the most steadfast when it comes to S.H.I.E.L.D. So it's going to be interesting to see what puts her on the odds with them. Hunter, you know, he can kind of sway one way or the other anyway. He's kind of one of those characters where, like, it's not, he's not as completely loyal to S.H.I.E.L.D. But Bobby's, you know, Bobby's Bobby. And it's going to be interesting to see what's going to be the catalyst to this. Anyway, last little bit, because this isn't necessarily TV news, but it's really interesting. Guys, if you play any of the Marvel games on, like, the mobile, like, Avengers Academy, or the Match 3 game that they've got, Puzzle Quest, and Marvel Heroes and Spider-Man Unlimited and Marvel Future Fight and Contest of Champions and the Lego Marvel Avengers. Every single one of these games is going to be getting a huge update with loads of female characters coming in. So it's an initiative called Women of Power that's running all through March. It's coinciding with Women's History Month. And also coinciding with all of the really cool variant covers that they're doing in the Marvel publishing side. So a load of their major titles are going to have variant covers that feature a female character front and center on the page. And there's 25 titles that are shipping this month with variant covers. So it is a huge female takeover for Women's History Month. So make sure to check that out, because I'm really looking forward to seeing the Avengers Academy update, because I've gotten to the point now where I've cleared everything off and everything's actually starting to look really nice, and I've built my school up and it's looking really cool. And I'm looking forward to getting some more lady characters though. So do you play any of those games, Caitlin?
I don't.
I will say Avengers Academy has gotten really addictive. You like build your own school and you get them all to do stuff, and you recruit new heroes to come and join the school. It's almost like a vague X-Men and Avengers mashup, because you're basically building your own school. So it's, I'm having a lot of fun with it. It's a massive time sink though. But that's it for sort of TV headlines and adjacently related stuff. Let us know what you think about the renewal news and Ward's new identity, and if you've picked up any of the Women of Power stuff from Marvel. But I guess let's get into the TV roundup for this week. So right off the bat, Flash and Arrow are now off on a very mini break. They come back. Caitlin's put the dates in. I'm guessing, yeah. You put the dates in, like, it's the American way, so I got very confused for a second then, because I was like, there's no 22nd month. There's no 23rd month. No, it comes back at the end of this month for both shows. On the 22nd and 23rd, respectively. Not in the 22nd month of the year.
No.
Right, let's start off with Agent Carter, because that was our, I was going to say big finale, but not necessarily a big
but
finale.
But was it?
Yeah. So I guess let's start off with that. How was the finale for you? Was it a satisfying end to season two, or did it kind of not live up to the expectations that you had for everything that built up to it?
I feel like the finale for me was sort of encapsulated the entire second half of the season, which was anticlimactic, I guess. It had a lot of moving pieces, but at the end of the day, like, everybody lived until, like, the last 5 seconds. But so, like, the stakes didn't actually end up feeling that high by the end of it for me. And it just, it didn't feel as clean as the first season did. So I feel like it was good, not great. And that's, like, I thought the beginning of the first season was very strong. And I just don't quite think the second half of the season quite lived up to it. And that's how I kind of feel about the finale as a whole.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. For me, it just kind of, I think I was saying to Caitlin just before we started getting into this, it's a little bit kind of, it felt like a Hollywood ending. It just hit the usual kind of story beats that you would come to expect from, like, it wasn't even necessarily flashy. It was just kind of really neat in respect to, it was like, everything conveniently just all fell into place without, like you said, without the stakes feeling really high. I wasn't concerned for anyone at all. I had no fear in this finale that we were potentially going to lose someone. And I just didn't have that kind of, it wasn't that intense. It wasn't that kind of heart beating, kind of heart in my throat sort of feeling like, yeah, it was anticlimactic, I think is probably the best way of putting it. That's how you put it, and it's probably the most accurate way to to see how this finale felt. It wasn't necessarily bad. It just, I didn't feel satisfied by the end of it. It just...
Yeah, it had things that I liked, like individual things that I liked, but the whole maybe wasn't quite as strong as it could have been.
Yeah, I mean, the showdown with Whitney was very disappointing for me because they built up so many interesting parallels in the first half of the season between Whitney and Peggy and their stories of how they came to be, where they were at this point in Agent Carter. And to not get the payoff of that right at the end of them having a proper showdown, it just felt... I was just really upset at that. I was like, that was something that I had a lot of investment in wanting to see, was they put so much into building up that connection, and the fact that it was basically Howard Stark swooping in at the end with a MacGuffin to kind of fix everything when he's kind of been a non-entity through the rest of the season. Like, it just... It almost felt a little bit cheap to me. Like, it just felt so convenient. What about for you? How did you feel about, like, how they wrapped up Whitney's story at the end?
Yeah, it was... I don't know, like, it never felt like there was an actual confrontation, because they kind of lure her in indirectly, and then it's just, like, completely hands-off, which somehow feels disappointing because you never really get that actual confrontation that at least I wanted to see specifically between Peggy and Whitney, especially after Whitney like pushed Peggy off of a ledge. Like, I wanted some type of communication or some type of conflict between the two of them, and it was very hands off with her, which felt strange.
Yeah, because Peggy is such a very hands-on kind of, she gets her hands dirty, she's very proactive a lot of the time in getting stuff done, and the fact that it was kind of for the most part taken out of her hands, I was a little bit disappointed at that, because this show is, yeah, okay, it's also a lot about all of the characters supporting each other and then working together and figuring out a way to kind of resolve these kind of huge threats to security and the safety of people by like working together and coming together and kind of sorting it out as a team. But a lot of this, it is Agent Carter at the end of the day, and Whitney and Peggy's storyline was so central to this whole season that I really wish that they would have given us that kind of ending that I was expecting, that confrontation and Peggy really taking charge, and then kind of I just wanted it to be like a showdown between the two of them. I think I would have preferred that rather than this sort of last minute MacGuffin that fixed everything.
I agree. Like, even if they had ended up using the MacGuffin at the end, like something leading up to it, like it takes Peggy like maneuvering her somehow into the right spot or something, just something that put them face to face.
Yeah, but in the end, it just kind of, the Zero Matter leaves Whitney, she's okay, all the cracks in her face disappear, and they cart her off to jail. That's...
Well, to the mental...
Well, yeah, I guess it's, yeah, she's she's locked up anyway, so it's just kind of one of those things where it was like, kind of, okay. It just, I don't know, I just wish there'd been something more satisfying from it. I guess the other thing that we got was confirmation that Peggy and Sosa are definitely on, so I guess this is... We can pretty much safely assume at this point that Sosa does work out to like be the husband that she references in Winter Soldier in that little clip that Steve watches. So
yeah, whatever.
I mean, I don't think there was any other conclusion that we could have expected. Everything fit in respect to their storyline and his backstory. it all lined up with that clip from Winter Soldier. So it was pretty much guaranteed for me that we were going to see some kind of confirmation that that was how it was going to play out in the end. But, you know, I was... It was kind of one of those things that it was nice. I liked it. I like Sosa. So it was kind of... It was okay for me to kind of, like, get that confirmed. But it wasn't, like, a massive part for me. It was just kind of... It was nice, but, you know...
Yeah, I can't say I was particularly invested in that aspect of the story. So just kind of like, okay.
I mean, even when, like, you had that moment where it was like, oh, there was that life or death kind of moment that, you know, you thought, oh, will they, won't they? No, I still didn't think that he was in any danger, but it kind of just pushed Peggy into being like, oh, I actually am in love with him. So it just kind of, I don't know, I'm just so kind of about the finale just in general. But, Thompson, holy crap, that was one thing I was not expecting.
That was definitely startling.
Yeah. It's definitely kind of one of those moments where I was like, whoa, what the hell? That's how you're gonna end the series? Like, and, you know, I may not have been Jack Thompson's biggest fan, but he did kind of, like, fluctuate at points in this season where it was, like, interesting in respect to where his loyalties lay. And, yeah, the assassination was just kind of, what? But... It was what. That's one way to end your finale, I guess.
I guess it's gonna feel weird if that is the very end and that's our last shot of the show.
Yeah, especially because it's all in the aims of getting that redacted Peggy file, that file that we saw the M. Carter one. It's gonna be really weird not to see how that would play out in another season, because it's obviously something, there's obviously something really important in there, but just what that is, we're not gonna know unless we get another season.
I mean, we know Peggy goes on to live a really long life, so obviously she's not gonna, like, be destroyed by this, but it is like, you've set up a mystery, and then the lack of renewal that's possible means we won't find out, which is disappointing.
Yeah, it is really disappointing. And I want to know, regardless of my feelings about Jack as a character, what is so important in that file that they would assassinate him to get it? And it has to be someone who knows that he has that file as well. And who would know, and who would want it so badly that they would kill him for it?
Vern. We didn't actually see a body.
Yeah. Any other thoughts on the Agent Carter finale?
I mean, I hope that's not the last we see of Agent Carter.
Yeah.
Obviously, so. But it was not my favorite episode they've ever done. I'll say that.
No, a couple of the episodes leading up to this have kind of been a little bit hit and miss. Mostly enjoyable, but a little bit kind of like... It wasn't as strong as the season started out, but as a whole, I think I really enjoyed season two a lot.
Agreed.
Yeah, but that's it now. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is back, Agent Carter is done, and we may or may not be getting more of it.
So watch this space.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have two DC shows to talk about because our other two are on break. So first we have Supergirl, which this week was focusing on Indigo, who we talked about in our brief history. She comes in and messes up things, but she's just sort of there to be the plot device mostly in this episode. We're really focused on the relationships between certain characters, but I guess we can start and say, what did we think of Indigo? She was played by a former Supergirl, which was cool.
I really like that. I really like that they brought her in. I thought that was a nice nod to her playing, like, the original Supergirl. Like, I thought, ah, that's really cool. Like, I like them doing that. I like them bringing in people who kind of originated these roles in other series. Like, I think it's just... it's really respectful and understanding of, like, where this sort of mythos and everything and the understanding of these characters originally came from, and getting them involved in almost not necessarily a reboot, but a retelling and bringing the character to a whole new audience. I love it. I love that they're getting so many people involved in telling this story and where, like, they originally came from. It warms my heart. It warms my little comic book nerdy heart.
Yeah, for those not familiar with the... Because we had Helen Slater, who played Supergirl in the movie, and then Laura Vandervoet, who played her in Smallville. So, like, if you don't know, it's fine, because it's still good actress. So you're like, oh, that's fine. But for those in the know, it's a fun little nod.
And also, I love Smallville so much for my sins. Like, it was just such an enjoyable show. So it was nice seeing her come in. And I quite liked Indigo. I mean, yeah, okay, she was pretty much a plot device to get everything rolling that they needed to, but, you know, pretty enjoyable villain all around. Like, the almost social commentary with, like, the Ashley Madison-esque kind of site hacking and dumping information, like, that was really cool. I like it when they take storylines that kind of riff off things that have happened in our kind of media culture already and kind of put another spin on it. I think that's quite fun.
I liked her quite a bit. I thought she was interesting, and we find out she has an interesting connection both to Non. Apparently they had some sort of relationship. Wasn't entirely clear what it was, though it was implied to be sexual, probably. But... we never find out directly, but we do know that she stayed away because of Astra. Now that Astra's dead, she's popping up. That's why it's taken so long for her to show up. But also, she is the reason that Kara left the Phantom Zone. She was looking for ways from Fort Roz to get out of the Phantom Zone, and she found Kara's pod and restarted it. And that's how they both got out. So that was kind of an interesting tie back to everything.
Yeah, because that was one of the questions that always kind of was looming over everything, was like, but how did they actually get out of the Phantom Zone? Both, you know, the Fort Roz kind of guys and Kara. So I'm glad that they've kind of at least cleared that storyline up a little bit and given us an answer to that. But that was a really nice nod back to the start of the series.
Yeah, and obviously Indigo won't be going anywhere, because even though Wynn infected her with some malware and destroyed her, Non collected up the pieces and, like, reformed her using some mysterious technology. So she'll be back, which is good, because she's pretty formidable, and having her go out like that seems, again, anticlimactic. So glad she'll be back.
Yeah, definitely. I think there's a lot more room for being able to use her as, like, a villain, and especially alongside Non. Like, that'll be interesting, seeing them kind of playing off each other and potentially working together now that Astra's gone. Because obviously, I think Astra tempered a lot of, like, who Non was and kind of reined him in a little bit, but now that she's gone and we've got two potentially fairly extreme villains, they're just gonna feed off each other and probably amp each other up a little bit. So yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing her coming back.
Yeah, but so Indigo was there to be kind of the movement forward, but the big two relationships were Lucy and James, and then the Kara, Alex, and Jean triangle of misery going on.
Triangle of misery. Oh god, that's so apt.
So I guess let's start with the slightly less awful relationship, which was Lucy and James, which was, again, it was sad because Lucy is kind of feeling, again, left out because James has information he shouldn't because of Supergirl, and he's not wanting to work with Lucy to figure things out because he's working with Supergirl, and she's starting to feel like she felt in Metropolis with Superman that was the reason they broke up in the first place. So they're strained, and Kara bless her heart, it's a thing we Southerners say, goes and tries to convince Lucy, like, James really cares about you. He's a great guy. Like, please understand. He told me this story about his dad and his camera. And Lucy's like, whoa, what? I didn't know that. He doesn't talk about that. So that makes her realize that James just isn't able to give her everything, so she breaks up with him. But this also occurs after Kara has given James permission to tell Lucy that she's Supergirl. So James is going to be like, hey, let me tell you this. And Lucy's like, we're done. So sad panda. I mostly feel bad for Lucy because she deserves more. And I'm not sure if like this is the last we see of her or if she's going to be hanging around because she moved to National City for James. But at the same time, she has a really good job now. Like, she left her job with the military, so she's a civilian, and she has a good job at a good company. So is she just going to leave, or is she going to be around? And she's around.
I'm really hoping that she'll stick around. I think that this was an inevitable conclusion for Lucy and James. I think it was good that they tried to reconnect and work through the issues that they had in Metropolis with everything with James and Superman, but obviously those issues are just replicated here, and it was nice to try and see them work through it and figure out their lives separately and together for where they are and where they wanted to be. You know, her coming into National City was good for her because she figured out what she kind of wanted to do with her life. And she seems to be really happy working at Catco. So professionally, it seems to have been a really good move for her. I kind of like that she doesn't blame Kara, and she doesn't really necessarily blame James either. It's just kind of one of those situations that is. And I kind of like that, because sometimes breakups are like that, you know? It's kind of nice to see it was almost an amicable split of sorts. There was no shouting, no screaming, no throwing plates and wanting to hit each other kind of thing. It just, they're two different people at two different points in their lives, and they don't work together. But I would like to see Lucy and James remain friends, because I really like the dynamic they have. I think Lucy doesn't let James get away with stuff. Like, she'll tell him straight, she'll tell him how it is. But I also think she'll be a really good friend to Kara as well. So I'd like to see her stay. I'd like to see those friendships develop. And I also really just want to continue seeing her working at Catco, because I think that's a really nice storyline for her. And she's such a huge part of the Supergirl and Superman mythos as well. She's so interconnected in all of that that I think it would just be really interesting to see that develop separately and kind of work through everything. Like, I want her to stay.
I agree, and I think it's significant that Kara does give James permission to tell her the secret, that it seems kind of pointless to do that and then just have Lucy leave. Like, she has proven that she would be a valuable member of the team. So I hope we'll see her brought in on the secret, maybe after a little time has passed, so they can both kind of lick their wounds, so to speak.
Yeah.
And then, like, bring her in, because she has valuable information. She's a valuable person and is very smart and connected. So I hope they bring her in. And I think what's really refreshing in this is we see both Kara and Lucy at various points telling, like, trying to help each other with this. Like, Kara tries to support Lucy, like, you know, James is a great guy for all these reasons, and he really cares about you. So there's nothing, like, she was not trying to hurt anything. Like, she had every intention to try and keep them together. And then Lucy, for her part, is just like, I recognize that you love her. She loves you. You're both probably not ready to say it, but know it's there. So she's, again, not blaming it. So where it would be so easy for that, you know, cat fight dynamic, they didn't go there, which I think, just shows more what we've seen, that these two women have a healthy respect for each other, which I appreciate.
Yeah, me too. I really do appreciate that this is the direction they're going in with it, because the thing with the love triangle trope is that it's so overdone and overwrought, and it's kind of tiring. And yeah, I don't know, I just kind of like the, yes, okay, it is, when you boil it down, technically a love triangle, you know, there are relationships on either side of this, but it's not a damaging one. It's not one that's antagonistic. It's not a really sort of poisonous kind of aspect. It's actually, you know, they're all adults and they're all dealing with this in a really adult way. And it's so refreshing to not see this blowing up into a huge drama. So I'm sad for Lucy, but I'm also really impressed with how this has played out.
Yeah, and I mean, I think for her, it's like she expects more for herself and knows she deserves more. So she ends it recognizing that she can't get what she feels she deserves from James because he has someone else better suited for him. And that's really mature and impressive. And I think it worked. I'm sad for her because I want her to have nice things, but obviously this one was not quite working out.
Yeah, and that's fine. But again, I would still like to see her stick around on Supergirl.
Agreed. But okay, the main heartbreaking...
the triangle of misery.
Yes. There's our episode title.
I know, yeah, I've already written it down.
is obviously the Kara, Alex, and Jean deception triangle, where Alex killed Astra, Jean took the blame, Kara left the DEO because she couldn't work with Jean, and Alex has let Jean take the blame and feels really horrible about it. So this episode kind of hammers home that when they're not working together, Kara and the DEO, bad things happen. So they need the resources they each have. They each come to kind of the same conclusions with their respective resources. But at the end of the day, Kara needs the DEO and the DEO needs Kara. So they both realize this. And so Kara returns and says, okay, I will have a work-only relationship with you, Hank. Like, I'm still hurt and upset, but I'm going to put that aside for the greater good. And Hank is fine with that, which that for me breaks my heart because we know how much he has lost and he has been developing this familial relationship, like kind of these surrogate daughters, and voluntarily loses one for the sake of the relationship between the sisters. Like, that breaks my heart because we know how much he is sacrificing for that. But Alex can't stand that, and she confesses the truth. And this scene, I didn't cry the first time I watched it, but then I rewatched it and I had tears coming down my face.
Oh,
because it is just so well acted. Like, Schuyler Lee, like, she nails this, the way she's just like tearfully telling Kara what happened and that she couldn't bear to lose her. And then when Kara looks like she's gonna leave and then stops and hugs her, and Alex just, like, the dam bursts, she just starts sobbing. And then Hank starts to walk away to give them privacy, and Kara grabs him and they hold hands because he is as much part of that family as Alex and Kara. And just, it's such a good scene. It's so powerful, so well acted, and so just so good.
yeah, it's just, I got really emotional at this. In fact, both DC shows this week got me, like, really teary-eyed and really emotional. Like, it was so good. But this particularly, like, the fact that Hank and Alex kind of both underestimated how willing Kara would actually be to forgive them both once the truth actually came out, that the love that she has for both of them trumps exactly what happened, even though Astra is her blood family, by the same respect Hank and Alex are also her family, and she needs to kind of come to terms with what happened, and she doesn't want to lose either of them. Like, it... I don't know. It's nice that there isn't this huge secret anymore as well. It's really good that they can now take steps to mending that relationship and getting back to where they were a little bit, because the tension that came off the back of this secret that they were keeping was like, it was almost suffocating. It was really well done, but it was just so hard to watch Kara pretty much breaking down every time, like, she kind of sees Hank and shuttering him and like cutting him out almost, and it just, it was so difficult to watch, but it was just so well done. And this just, this all kind, it all building up into this was just such a great emotional payoff for everything that's sort of happened since Supergirl's come back after its little break. So I was really impressed. This whole episode really impressed me, actually, with how they handled the interpersonal relationships of a lot of these characters.
Yeah, and I'm glad the secret storyline is not going on any longer, because that sort of thing is just so tired in terms of storytelling. It's kind of, when it's something that lasts for a long time, it's very lazy. And so I'm glad it only lasted like 2 episodes, and then we're like, okay, done, moving forward. We have more important things to deal with.
Yeah, yeah, no, I agree with that. And but they kept it to give it just the right amount of concentrated tension without it getting frustrating to the point where you get sick of the storyline. I think they kept the story beats just long enough for this big emotional payoff. So, yeah. I like that they didn't drag it out unnecessarily. They let it play out in a really natural way, because sometimes when you are keeping that big of a secret, it'll out in like a really big emotional way. So it was good that Alex found it really difficult to keep that big of a secret from Kara, and she told her the truth. So I like that this is how it played out. I was very impressed.
Agreed. So, incredible scene, and I just have all the feels about it. I just love that this little found family that they are creating, like, this little trio, and then you've got the other people that are included, like, James and Wynn are starting to be brought into the DEO circle, but this core bit of Kara and Alex and Hank / Jean, it's just, I think it's really wonderful.
Yeah, absolutely agreed.
All right, so let's move on to Legends of Tomorrow, which had its own bit of misery. I guess my first question is whether we're supposed to think that Rip is a competent captain, because in this episode, he is not. He is about as incompetent as they get in this episode, like, actually going after this signal, like, SOS distress signal, and everyone on board is like, this is a dumb idea. It's a trap. And he's like, no, we're going to do the thing. And they're like, don't do the thing. We're doing the thing. I told you not to do the thing. And just, ugh. He just, the more it goes, it feels like he's not very good at his job. But the narrative is trying to tell us that he is.
But I don't necessarily agree with that. I think what we were supposed to see a little bit of in those flashbacks to him, like, meeting his wife and how everything kind of shook out with that, was that actually when it came down to it, he wasn't the best, like, kind of time master. I was going to call him a time lord then. I'm like, no, wrong show. He wasn't the best kind of time master. His wife actually was a lot better than him. She was more willing to think outside the box. She was, you know, very flexible with her plans. You know, she just all around was a lot more competent, but she gives that up and he remains as a time master. And it's just kind of like one of those things where I was like, but why? Couldn't he have been a stay-at-home dad? That would have been fine, but...
But then we get, like, the pirates being like, oh, Rip Hunter, you have a reputation of being a badass. And yeah. I'm like, really? Like, but really? Not the Rip Hunter we know.
Yeah, I don't know that I completely buy it yet. Especially when it's juxtaposed against those flashbacks, because it's kind of a little bit like... But we kind of see that he's not really a badass. Like, it's kind of like, it's almost like Chinese whispers. Maybe he isn't actually that much of a badass. Maybe it's just loads of rumors and stories that have been, like, passed around. And it is legitimately like Chinese whispers with it getting back to people. It's exaggerated to the point where people think he's more dangerous than he actually is. Then he rocks up and he's like dropping his gun and just doing, like, falling over. No, I don't know. I don't, honestly, I think the strength in this comes from the team and them all working together, but I actually am starting to feel like Rip in some ways is the weak link. So, whereas he's trying to push them, like, he's trying to push them all to work together, but I'm starting to get the feeling that he's where the team is falling down a little bit now. So, I don't know. Everyone else had, like, big damn hero moments pretty much in this episode. And it was less, he was more just reacting to things as they happened rather than actually being able to kind of, like, take charge. So, yeah, I don't know. That's how I felt anyway.
Yeah, I'm just more going, how much are we supposed to have confidence in him? Because I don't have very much.
No, not especially, but maybe they'll keep building that up as the series progresses, but, you know. This wasn't, like, for me, even though it was kind of nice to see a little bit more of, like, him before he became, like, a fully fledged, like, Time Master. Like, it was nice to get those flashbacks, but it wasn't the part of the episode that I was most invested in. Like, there was a lot more of this episode that I kind of wished we'd focused on more than his story, because I wasn't overly invested in that.
Speaking of things we're not invested in, Kendra and Ray. I just have one word. Why? Why?
I don't know. I mean, I didn't necessarily dislike it, but I didn't have any particular feelings of being like, this is awesome as well. Yeah, I don't know. It was just kind of one of those things where I was like, oh, okay, that's a thing that we're doing after, like, in the previous episode, Kendra was like, this isn't something that I'm ready for yet. Like, I don't think this is something I want to explore, to her kissing him. And I get that, like, he went through a really serious life or death situation. Like, it was pretty, you know, it was pretty close with him surviving, but at the same time,
why was she going, I need you, don't leave me? Like, you've known each other for like 5 seconds.
Yeah, I mean, it could be this is the thing, if anyone checked out the interview that we did with the actress who plays Kendra, which went up on Hyperbole as well, we asked her a load of questions about how she felt about Kendra's sort of ability to be able to move on from this intertwined destiny that she had with Carter, and did she believe that there was a potential for her to, you know, make her own way, create her own life, have love outside of that? And, you know, she had a really great answer for it, but it could, I will play devil's advocate here, that exploring this with Ray, even if it doesn't become serious, even if it stays kind of casual, kind of them exploring it, it could help Kendra come to the realization that even without Carter, she can choose things for herself. So I can see that there's a lot of potential for what they could do with this. It just feels a little fast, but they could play with this narrative in a really interesting way in respect to Kendra's feelings of predestination when it comes to Carter and her reincarnation cycle. So,
yeah, I'm not necessarily opposed to Kendra exploring romance with someone else. Like, I'd say good for you, but it was very, like, heightened and overly dramatic for the connection that they have, which was, like, little bit of flirtiness and maybe let's get coffee sometime, not, oh my God, you're the love of my life, which was the way she was reacting.
Yeah, that's the bit that concerns me. And I'm almost wondering, like, have we... Like, I had to stop and think for a moment, like, had I missed some scenes? Had I missed something that kind of had suggested earlier on that there was a stronger connection between them than I was actually thinking that there was? And, you know, like I said, I'm not necessarily opposed to this being a storyline that plays out, but it felt a little bit too intense for the point in the story that we're at between them, so.
Yeah. And compared to kind of the core relationship of this episode, it definitely felt a little wonky.
Yeah, definitely.
So speaking of core relationships, obviously, the one here is Mick and Leonard. I think one of the interesting things we get here is we find out how they became partners in the first place. And Leonard tells Sarah, by the way, loved everything with him and Sarah in this episode.
Yes.
It was so understated. Like, they were playing cards and then they, like, get locked up in the area and in the airlock. And, like, they just talk, which is just, I don't know. I love the two of them together. Like, I think they're really great. But anyway, Leonard tells her that when he was 14, he was sent to juvie and he was like the scrawny youngest kid there and was going to get the shit beaten out of him, essentially. And this other kid had a shiv, and then Mick stepped in and protected him and has been kind of standing up for him since. So they've known each other a very long time and have a very important role in each other's lives. So that makes kind of what the way their relationship is falling apart even more painful to watch. It's more than just a criminal relationship. Like, it's actually important to both of them. And we end up seeing, you know, Leonard thinks that Mick is going to calm down from being knocked out and dragged out of 2046 when he was pretty much in heaven. And Mick doesn't. Mick is furious. And so he betrays everybody and is going to give the ship over to the pirates and tells Leonard to choose a side. And Leonard does. He chooses the hero side. And I was just like, round of applause.
That moment, my, like, I sucked in a breath. I was like, and I just, oh my God. Like, it was just, it was like the massive culmination of Leonard's arc up until this point. And him finally making that choice. And I think he'd kind of come to terms already that there was going to be a defining moment where he would need to choose who he wanted to be. Did he want to still be this part of a twosome with Mick, where they are essentially looking out for themselves and the next opportunity to kind of steal something and get the upper hand and do something for their own gain? Or did he believe in something more, in the fact that what they were doing was more than what they originally signed on for? Did he feel like he had... Does he feel like he has the potential to positively impact the way that this would work out? And I like that when it came down to it, he chose to be a hero. Like, I really, really love... It's been such a hugely subtle arc from when he was introduced to now. And it's just, it played out so damn well. And just him being like, I've chosen. And just like, it was such a great moment. I was like, holy.
Somewhere Barry Allen is going, I knew it. I knew it.
Yeah. God, can you imagine what it's going to be like when Barry and Leonard interact again eventually? Because I have zero doubts that they will run into each other again at some point. But can you imagine what that's going to be like? Like, how can you just imagine Barry just smiling and Leonard being like, shut up.
Grin, like, yeah. I told you.
Yeah, like, Barry not even saying a damn thing, just smiling, and Leonard just being like, shut up, and Barry's just still smiling, and he's like, I said shut up.
Like, I didn't say anything. You were thinking it.
it's going to be so
arc has been amazing.
Yeah.
But, so... Leonard chooses to be a good guy, and they help, and they stop Mick and beat the pirates. And then
yeah,
they try to figure out what to do with Mick, because they're like, well, we can't just lock him in the brig until we beat Vandal Savage, because, like, we don't know how long that's going to take, and that's just a problem waiting to happen for him to break out or something. And then we can't just drop him back in 2016, because any of the family members of the team who live then would be in danger of retribution, essentially. So can't drop him back in time. Can't lock him up. What are you going to do? So Leonard says, in this really, like, eerily matter-of-fact tone, I'll take care of him. We're like, oh, you're going to murder him? What? Like, you just chose to be a good guy, and now you're going to go murder him? Like, what? He's like, I'll take care of it. So he drags Mick out into some clearing. We don't know when or where this is. And wakes Mick up, and he's like, oh, so I see what the plan is. You're going to kill me and leave me. So this is where their relationship really completely fractures, that Mick says, you know, only one of us is going to leave alive. And Leonard has this really stricken look on his face. He's really in pain at this. And he's like, I agree. And we see him shoot the gun, but we don't see what happened. That's our cliffhanger.
Yep. This moment was so intense, because it's kind of, this is the thing with Legends of Tomorrow in general, is that the team is so mismatched that sometimes the characters that we've got, they will do the things that some of the other characters aren't willing to do. Because even though they kind of fall morally on the side of good, they are still willing to do things that maybe aren't as savory to the other people. And characters like Leonard, and maybe a little bit like Sarah, and maybe Rip to an extent as well, you know, even though they fall on the side of good, if it comes down to, for example, having to kill someone in what is necessarily cold blood, because it's the only way to ensure the safety of everyone, they are willing to do it. And it's a very heavy burden and responsibility for them to take in order to keep the other characters who aren't as willing to do that and aren't as willing to step over the line, you know, still morally just, and kind of protecting them from having to make that decision. It's such a heavy burden for those characters to carry. And the fact that Leonard, like, kind of hard shuts everyone down and is like, look, it's basically his responsibility and he will deal with it. And then he does. I was just like, wow. Wow, it was just a really incredibly powerful moment, because you can see how heavily this is going to weigh on him going forward, and he still does it because it is legitimately the only solution that they have. They have zero other way of doing it. I mean, granted, they could take him to a random place in time and space and drop him off there, but they couldn't in good conscience do that without realizing that wherever they put Mick in space and time, it would really severely impact the people that he would come into contact with. So, yeah, it was a difficult decision, but I think I don't know if I want to say credit to Leonard's character, because it's such a horrific thing that he had to do, but I think it was still in keeping with his arc up until this point, that even though he's chosen to be a hero, there are still things that he will do that some of the others on the team won't. And when you're dealing with someone like Vandal Savage and everything that comes with that, those people who are good but can still operate in shades of grey are still quite necessary. So, yeah. I don't know. I was very impressed. It was absolutely devastating and heartbreaking, because they've gotten us so invested in Leonard and Leonard's relationship with Mick and with a lot of the other characters up until this point, that it just hit that much harder. It was like a goddamn sucker punch, but this was a really solid episode all around, especially for Leonard. It is turning into Captain Cold and Friends, pretty much.
Well, that being said, I don't think Mick is actually dead. Like, I don't think he killed him.
You don't think so?
No, absolutely not.
Hmm.
I think 100% not.
That's interesting. Do you think that wherever he is, in good conscience, he'll be left there to wreak havoc? Or do you think it's somewhere deserted, completely deserted, no other life at all?
I mean, I assume they left him somewhere, like, super deserted, but my feeling on the matter is that they are so invested in exploring this relationship between Mick and Leonard that to end it there is kind of not enough, that there would be more story opportunities for Mick to, like, we've seen Leonard, like, spray Barry with the ice and, like, just stop him. And yeah. Then Barry, like, used, like, heat in his suit to get out and make his heat wave. So I feel like he'll probably, like, immobilize him somehow. And because he just can't bring himself to do it, because you can see the pain in his face. So I feel like he'll get out of it somehow and then maybe even team up with Vandal Savage.
Ooh,
that would be more painful or powerful than exploring the fractured relationship between them, than having them literally on opposite sides of the same fight because of a choice that Leonard made. And then Mick has this vital information about this team that Vandal knows nothing about. He just knows he keeps running into the same group at random periods in time, and Mick can fill in the gaps. So I feel like it's far more powerful for him to be alive and to join the other side so they can continue exploring how that relationship has fallen apart due to the way Leonard's character has evolved.
Yeah, that actually, I would love to see that play out. But not only that, I think that everyone else on the team is probably going to assume then that Mick is dead, because Leonard kind of lets them assume that's what he's going to do, like take him out back to shoot him kind of thing. So if Mick did turn up later on Vandal Savage's side, like, that would be a huge, huge thing for the rest of the team as well, when they realize that he couldn't go through with it. Like, oh,
I just can't see, like, with everything that we learned about their relationship in this episode, I can't see him being able to go through with it.
Yeah. Oh. Now I hope that that's how it plays out, because that would be pretty devastating.
I mean, the way they framed it was the classic shot of, oh my god, someone shot a gun! But then in the next episode picks up and you see it, like, went to their side or something.
Yeah.
Because if they really wanted us to be like, oh my god, he killed him, they could have shot it, like, from behind Mick and shown him being hit with the ice or something. Like, the way it was shot was very ambiguous, and we know in comic book stories, these ambiguous deaths never mean death. And even in the Arrowverse, death itself doesn't have to mean death. Hi, Sarah. Like, so
this is true.
I 100% don't think he's dead.
I guess we'll find out next week. Maybe. Yes.
Or maybe not. Maybe they'll, like, take an episode and, like, let it sit or something. I don't know.
Or even a couple of episodes and let it sit. Oh.
We shall see.
Yeah.
But I don't think he's dead.
Hmm. Anything else to add for Legends of Tomorrow?
Let's say Martin Stein is turning into, like, a one-man wrecking team.
Like... Oh my god, right? I was just like, damn, Stein, like, what the hell?
Space Ranger.
Yeah, that was some Malcolm Reynolds Firefly Big Damn Hero crap going on there.
Yeah, exactly. And I enjoyed all the, like, Star Wars and Star Trek.
Oh my god. I made a ridiculous noise when Jax was like, I've got a bad feeling about this. I was like, oh my god, I love you. And then when they compare Ray to Picard, they're like, you're definitely not a Kirk. You're not a Captain Kirk. You're definitely a Picard. And when he was trying to insist, like, he's Han Solo, and I'm like, oh, Ray, no. You are so not a Han Solo, like, at all.
I also thought Mick has a couple of lines where he's like, he's gonna go parlay with the pirates.
And oh my god, do we have an accord?
I was like, he has watched Pirates of the Caribbean. And then I got tweeted by the script supervisor who said, I thought the same thing when I read the script.
That's so cool. Yeah, I had a moment of like wanting to quote Pirates of the Caribbean like almost verbatim from that bit. I was like, oh my god, that's so good. They have some really nice nods to like to other properties that and sci-fi properties that are really great. Yeah, all of those were so much fun. I loved it.
I mean, how can you do pirates without Pirates of the Caribbean? It's true.
Yeah, it is very true.
There were lots of funny moments, I thought. For as serious and sad as some parts of this were, there were some very funny moments as well.
Yeah, definitely. I'm looking forward to next week. Just every week, I'm like really looking forward to seeing this show. It's getting me to the point where I'm like getting really antsy for the next episode all the time. Yeah, but... Let's move on to our movie headlines. Not a lot, guys. First thing we got today is that Disney have announced that it isn't planning to release any R-rated Marvel movies. Not entirely surprising.
Shocker.
Yeah, I think they've built a very solid brand on the movie side that works as, like, family movies, but it has enough threat and intensity without having to have violence and really really high sexual content in order to drive it. Like, it doesn't mesh very well with, like, the stories that they're telling necessarily. And that doesn't mean that they're not good movies, it's just that they're very interested in telling the stories the way that they need to be told. And they don't want to shoehorn in an R rating where it's not necessary. Like, Marvel properties, some of them would warrant an R rating, but not the ones that Marvel Studios are currently putting out on the big screen. I think they're really smart in that they're separating that a little bit and leaving their more violent content, their more hard-hitting content in that respect to Netflix. Like, I think they've got a really nice divide with how they're working with it, so not surprised, and I think the way that they're moving forward and the way that they're dealing with their brand is, it works for them. Like, I don't think they're gonna look at Deadpool and be like, this is the only model that works now, we have to aspire to be this. Like, some studios may they may end up falling into that trap. I think Marvel at this point have so secure in what they're doing that they're not gonna look to Deadpool as this, like, second coming of superhero movies. As good as Deadpool was and as well as that worked, it worked in isolation because Deadpool kind of warranted having an R rating. So kudos to Disney for basically coming out and being like, yeah, Deadpool is pretty much Deadpool, and that worked, but we're not gonna go down. I feel
like that would also be damaging to their brand as, like, family-friendly entertainment to have an R-rated film, so this is, like, the least newsworthy announcement ever.
Yeah, but I think a lot of people, like, around and about have, like, wanted to ask them if they'll do it now that Deadpool is such a success, and it's kind of like, no. So I'm kudos to them for sticking to their guns, basically, and letting, like, the Netflix shows stand for themselves in what they represent, and their movies, what they represent separately. Like, I am glad that they've come out and basically said that, so now people can put that discussion to bed and realize that just because Deadpool was such a huge critical success of what it's doing doesn't mean that all superhero shows are now going to evolve to fit that mold. So I'm glad that at least one studio has come out and been like, we're putting that conversation to bed and being like, no, that's not how it's going to work out. But speaking of Marvel, they've also released 9 Captain America Civil War images in high resolution. They are the same as a couple of images that we got recently, so there's nothing really new a lot of these are scenes and bits that we saw in the trailer anyway. So there's one that's really kind of cool, which is Black Widow walking over a load of cars. it looks really cool. And we get a nice look at T'Challa next to Steve and Sam as well. So yeah, it's nice to see him in his like civilian setting. And the other really cool little image that we get is just this nice little look between Bucky and Steve as well. But what did you think of some of these images? There's nothing really massively new here.
I like looking at them. I just need this movie in my eyeballs. Like, 2 months is just too long. Like, just give it to me already.
Yeah.
I'm ready. Give it to me.
I think we all are. I'm still, like, obsessively checking, like, the cinema app to see when I can book tickets. I'm, like, getting to that point.
Yeah, I'm ready. But speaking of getting film images, we also got some Batman v Superman images. We got, one of Diana and Superman testifying in front of Congress and Lex Luthor's awful Oliver Queen wig. And Alfred, as well as the trio. And then we have, like, this giant Batman suit and Superman, like, facing off against each other. So, I mean,
you mean the one where Superman's literally got his hand over Batman's heart and it looks like they're about to kiss, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and we also got a TV spot, which was, like, the two of them fighting. And I'm sort of over the hype for this movie. Like, I'm just ready for it to be here because I'm kind of sick of looking at images and scenes that look just so overly grim. And
I'm basically going into this film now thinking it's like a rom-com with like a massive lover's tiff between the two of them. Like, this is how I'm viewing this movie now. It's this is how it's going. I bought my tickets already to go and see it. So
I'm going in with Marima's attitude of, wait, there's things besides Wonder Woman? What?
Yeah, I'm going in for Wonder Woman and for the epic Batflick and Supes love story that is clearly going to be what this film is about.
They'll be spending some time at the Fortress of Solitude.
Oh god, I'm like, now that I've like started looking at this film differently, I'm like, okay, I'm actually kind of looking forward to seeing it a little bit more. But yeah, I don't know, it's that one image of Batman and Superman with the hand on his chest and kind of looking, the internet is running with it, and I'm kind of really ridiculously enjoying the captions people are coming up with. So yeah,
I want to watch the movie with the Jimmy Kimmel deleted scene. Like,
oh my god. Oh my god. I love that so much. I was like, please tell me the whole movie is going to be like that. Please. We do things a little differently in Gotham. And his like, his face. Oh.
He's like, that can't be Superman. Superman has perfect vision and he has glasses.
Takes the glasses off.
Oh my god.
I've been so stupid. Yeah, yeah, you kind of have. It just took me 2 seconds to figure it out.
See, if that were the movie, I'd really be looking forward to it.
Oh my god. It was so good, though. I loved that. I kind of really, really hope that parts of the movie might be a little bit like that, but I don't know. We'll see. It's soon. It's like a couple of weeks' time, so yeah. Okay, that's pretty much it for movie news. There's nothing else that's really happened. I think they're going to probably ramp down a little bit. We might get some more TV spots as we get closer to Civil War, but yeah, I think we've hit the point now where like movie stuff is ramping down because it's just the same promotional material over and over again. So now it's just the waiting game for the films actually coming out.
Yeah. So let's get it done with.
Yes. Comic Corner. So in honor of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. being on the horizon to coming back and us knowing that they're going to be like kind of playing up the inhuman side of things more in this half of the season, I thought it would be really cool to give you some Daisy Johnson and Quake recommendations for where you can read a little bit more about her and to see if you can glean any kind of clues as to what might be happening in the second half of this season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So first one I've got for you guys is Secret War. So this is a little mini run by Brian Michael Bendis and was Daisy's first introduction to the Marvel Universe. She was introduced as a trusted agent of Nick Fury's, and she gets involved in helping to put a stop to a foreign power supplying supervillains with weapons. It flashes between the original mission to stop that and 1 year later, and features some other big Marvel heroes like Captain America, Wolverine, and Spider-Man. It's maybe not the strongest title beginning to end, but it is a good basis for getting to know Daisy. Next one I've got is Secret Invasion. Now, Secret Invasion is where we see Daisy take up the mantle of Quake when she joins Nick Fury's Secret Warriors. This was a huge event run revealing that the Skrulls had managed to infiltrate many high-powered positions in order to take control of the Earth. And with it being almost impossible to differentiate between shapeshifted Skrulls and the real heroes, this was an intense story that left relationships fractured and led to some huge shakeups. And that kind of leads into the next series, which is Secret Warriors. So the Secret Warriors storyline was where we saw Quake go from supporting character to center stage. This is also largely where Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. mines its biggest story beats from. And Secret Warriors is where Quake gets to shine as a leader and proves herself a true force to be reckoned with. I won't go too much into the actual plot because it's a hugely complicated spy-based story that really deserves to be enjoyed start to finish. But needless to say, this is where the payoff for Secret War and Secret Invasion really plays out. And the last one I've got for you guys is Quake S.H.I.E.L.D. 50th Anniversary Number 1. While this isn't a particularly revolutionary run, which is always difficult for a one-shot anyway, it is a highly enjoyable look into Quake as a character, as well as her motivations for doing what she does. It has a pretty strong roster of guest characters supporting her too, and also provides some insight into Quake's struggle for where she fits in with them. It's a pretty fun issue all told, and hopefully it'll see an eventual continuation in a new series. Yes, so let's just get into our feedback. So we got some really nice bits of feedback, as always, so thanks guys for sending this in. Adriana Castle left us a comment that said, "Finally caught up to episode 38. Donya's revelation of dropping Hawkeye makes me wonder if it was her twin that recorded." Yeah. Verdict kind of still out on that, by the way, guys. I'm still not entirely sure what I'm going to be doing with it, but it's still looking like I'm going to leave it be for a bit and maybe come back to it later. Yeah.
Kim Bayman says, "Okay, that ending of Agent Carter means there has to be a third season, right?" And we hope so, Kim. We really hope so.
Yeah, definitely. Stephanie Merrill says, "Oh God, what if whatever kicks off Most Wanted ties into Civil War?" You know, that would actually make a lot of sense.
Yeah, it would.
Yeah, because I think around the time Civil War comes out, we'll be seeing... It'll be coming up to the end of this half of the season, right? Pretty much.
Yeah, it comes out beginning of May, and that's about when shows start ending.
Yeah, it comes out in April for me, so I've, like, messed up my timing slightly. It
comes out on May 6th for us.
Okay. So, yeah, it would... the timing would work out, I think. Stephanie also said, "I'm starting to think Kat only pretended to believe Kara and is purposely pressuring her so she'll reveal she's Supergirl. Oh, good. I'm not the only one."
Yes, because we talked about this.
Yes.
Not convinced that Kat is convinced that Kara is not Supergirl. So yeah. I hope we get that revelation that she's like later in the scene and is like, "I knew it."
Basically,
point, so
that would be really
good. What I'm
hoping
for.
Yeah, it'd be really fun if that worked out. So, guys, if you want to leave us feedback at all, you can do so by dropping us a line on our Twitter account, which is at Hero Hype Podcast. You can send us an email, which is herohypepodcast@gmail.com, or you can leave a comment on this post when it goes up on hyperbole.com. But last week, we asked you the question, if you could channel the powers of any animal, what animal would it be? We got a couple of answers to that question of the week, and the first one was from sometime Hero Hype host Danielle, who said, I channel the powers of anything that flies because I want to fly so bad, it's my life goal.
I'm with Danielle because on all those quizzes that are like, what superpower would you want? I always pick flight. That's always the one that I want.
Yeah, flight would be pretty damn awesome.
I'm jealous of Vixen. Shelby says, powers from any animal? Squirrel, so I can be the perfect squirrel girl. Hire me, MCU.
Oh my god, that's awesome. I love that answer so much, Shelby. And Cassie also answered and said, I would go with a flying animal, except I don't think that would actually enable me to be able to fly. I don't know how this works. If it gave me the ability to fly, I'd pick an owl for flight and night vision. But if it didn't give me the ability to fly, then I would want to channel a cheetah. Speed, stealth, agility. I'd be so sexy and sleek.
Well, Vixen did fly in this episode, so it does give you the ability to fly.
Yeah.
Which was pretty cool to see her, like, soaring across the sky.
Yeah, it was kind of like, is it a bird? Is it a plane?
It's Vixen! So, our question of the week for you for this coming week, in honor of the previous episode of Supergirl, what would your Fortress of Solitude look like?
Lots of pillows, blankets, and probably Wi-Fi. Yeah.
I pretty much decided it would be a pillow fort.
Yeah. Yeah, something nice and comfortable, but I don't think I'd get away with not having the internet. But yeah, let us know, guys. Either on Twitter, comments, the usual. And we will be back next week for all of the shows that are on then and whatever news comes out. So until then, I'm Danya.
And I'm Caitlin.
And thanks for listening, guys. Bye.
Bye.